Blazor Desktop with Elon Lipton.
The Azure DevOps Podcast is a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Each show brings you hard-hitting interviews with industry experts, innovating better methods, and sharing success stories. Listen on to learn how to increase quality, ship quickly, and operate well. And now your host, Jeffrey Palermo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jeffrey Palermo, your host for helping you and your teams move fast, deliver quality, and run your software with confidence in Azure, all while using everything the .NET ecosystem has to offer. This podcast is sponsored by ClearMeasure, a software architecture company that empowers .NET teams to be self-sufficient and able to deliver world-class results. ClearMeasure is hiring architects and .NET engineers who'd like a path to become an architect. So go to clearmeasure.com/careers. And then finally, be sure to check out my new video show, Architect Tips. You can just search for it anywhere you find podcasts. And my guest for this show today is Elon Lipton. He is a principal software engineer. He's been with Microsoft since 2002, holding a number of roles focusing on different parts of .NET the entire time. Elon, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
Hi, I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. You have been entrenched in the .NET world since basically it came out publicly. But for those who haven't heard you speak or seen presentations from you, just by way of introduction, would you mind giving the listeners just kind of the high points of your path, you know, into Microsoft and along the way?
Yeah, for sure. So I started out as an intern at Microsoft on the ASP.NET team back in 2000, even 2000 and then 2001. Then I came back full time in 2002. Some of the things that the highlights that I consider highlights of my career were working on the update panel control, which was love it or hate it. I think it kind of helped bring .NET devs into the world of Ajax. And then as the engineering manager of ASP.NET, which I was for many years, you know, seeing technologies like Blazor come around and bring C Sharp, you know, off of the server and into the client space was kind of a huge shift. And so kind of overseeing a lot of that technology kind of make its way into everybody's machine was, quite an experience. And I still work on Blazor.
Now, didn't you also work on a portion of the Web API framework?
Yeah, so the first versions of MVC and Web API was also one of the things that I worked on as an engineer and as an engineering manager. And kind of seeing back when the MVC was popularized, I think Ruby on Rails, I think kind of really brought MVC to the forefront. And we felt we needed something like that in the .NET world. And so we started out with ASP.NET MVC running on .NET framework, and then later ASP.NET Web API, and then .NET Core came around and kind of merged and shook the universe around a little bit, unified the whole world. And, you know, it's been .NET Core for, gosh, more than half a decade.
Right, right. You know, there's some technologies that end up, or frameworks that end up getting replaced, and then there's others that they become so essential that they just get built upon. And I think of Web API as one of the programming model of it. It's like here to stay. It's like one of going to be those permanent fixtures in the .NET ecosystem.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think part of the reason for that is I think the nature of what Web API is and how it's built, which is that we tried to keep Web API pretty close to the protocol, which is ultimately HTTP. And so by I think having it seem very natural in terms of GET, POST, and kind of the raw language of URLs and HTTP methods and bodies and parsing and things like that, it applies just as much today as it did, you know, 5 years ago or 10 years ago, because it's still the same language. All web apps build on HTTP fundamentally. And so you can build other protocols on top of that, which many things do, but most of the web is HTTP. And you know, as long as Web API speaks HTTP, I think it stays relevant.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listeners, if you are listening to this show the exact day that it comes out, then tomorrow is .NET Conf. For the rest of you, .NET Conf has already come and gone. It's a few days after it's come out, or weeks or months or whatnot. So that's our time frame. And a whole lot is coming out with .NET 6. It's already just kind of we're just waiting for the GA drop of Visual Studio 2022 to be able to download it. But we've had other guests talking about Blazor and how it fits into a DevOps environment and an architecture, but we haven't really gone deep on Blazor desktop, and that's been your world, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Blazor desktop that's what I work on 24 hours a day. Almost anyway. And bringing Blazor desktop, which means we can run Blazor components in desktop applications and mobile applications as well.
I think that's really interesting. Now, I've also been programming since the late 90s and done a lot of desktop work, but so many, if you look at the survey, so many developers today started on web technologies and have not really done any native desktop technologies like WinForms or WPF, but they can sling HTML and CSS like nobody's business. And so with Blazor desktop, I think there's probably a lot of these developers thinking, wait a minute, I can run a desktop program with what I already know. What's your version of the vision for Blazor desktop?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. There's a huge percentage of people, and when you're talking about a large audience, a large percentage of a large number is itself a very large number, who they live and breathe HTML and CSS. And they have a lot of skills already in that, and they also have a lot of assets as well. They've already built really cool templates. They already know all the cool libraries to use for, you know, building up styles, whether it's, you know, Tailwind or Bootstrap, things like that. And you're right, they often don't do a lot of desktop, in part because which desktop? You know, there's so many different places to run. And then what about mobile? There's not that many different places to run on mobile, but
there's two.
I guess desktop, it's mostly two, two and a half.
Well, and Chromebook. I mean, more and more, we can't ignore Chromebook. They're huge education now.
Yeah, it's huge. It's absolutely huge. And we'd love for there to be a great way for people to build applications to target all of those natively, but still use the same skills and, if possible, the same assets that they have that they've already built. And similarly for .NET developers, kind of, we have a lot on the server, we have a lot on the client, but there's this kind of gap between how you code on the server using ASP.NET or, you know, with Web API or MVC, and what you can do on the client, where you can reach the client natively with technologies like WinUI and WPF and WinForms, or in the browser with Blazor WebAssembly. But there's still this kind of gap, like the code you write is not compatible between the two unless it's just .NET standard code. But if you actually want to build the UI, we don't really have a great pattern for crossing between those until now with Blazor desktop. And so we really want to kind of make it absolutely clear that with C# and .NET, you can build literally any type of application and reuse your code as much as possible, and your skills and your training. And if you've got a team of developers who know C# and .NET, or they know HTML and CSS, kind of no matter where they're coming from, boy, have we got a platform for you. And I think Blazor desktop really helps achieve that.
Can you give us a quick run through of what are the distinct options?
Yeah, absolutely. So Blazor desktop, the primary place where you can use it is in .NET MAUI applications. .NET MAUI is in some sense the successor to Xamarin Forms. So unless you use a C# and Visual Studio and build applications for Android, iOS, macOS, and Windows. And there are some other kind of future possibilities there for targeting other platforms as well. And you can run Blazor desktop as a control, just like you have buttons and labels and stack panels. It's a control that you can host your Blazor web components inside that. So your .razor files that contain HTML and CSS and JavaScript interop and other things, you can run them inside that web view control, the Blazor web view, on all those platforms. We also have options separate from .NET MAUI that are the Blazor WebView control for WPF. So you can take any existing WPF application or a new WPF application running on .NET Core, drop a Blazor WebView control in there, point it at your Razor class library that has your Razor components in it, and run it directly inside there, and you have full access to the operating system functionality. And then also WinForms, which is near and dear to my heart because I used to do so much WinForms programming. And
oh, everybody did.
Anytime I need that little quick little application, like I just want a little client application. It's so snappy and I love it. And it's, you know, building resizable layouts is a chore in WinForms. It's not so great at that. But that's kind of a testament to, you know, it being 20, you know, more than 20 years old, really. But I love it.
Now you said Blazor WebView. Now the Windows team has been working on like what they call WebView 2 for a while. So what's the relationship?
Yeah, absolutely. There is in fact a relationship there. So the Blazor WebView control is especially on .NET MAUI, it's a platform independent control. So you, the app developer, typically just code against the Blazor WebView. You tell us what's your root page, what component do you want to run? And there's a few other options for, you know, setting the size and background color, things like that, kind of standard type of control layout type of things that you'd have on almost any control, any kind of visual UI control. But how does it actually put pixels on the screen? So great, you've got a Blazor component, it's got CSS and HTML. Something has to actually put, you know, the pixels on the screen. What does it run? Well, it depends on which platform. We use whatever the appropriate native web view is on that platform. So on Android, we use the WK web view control, which is the WebKit web view. It's based on Chrome. Not surprising on Android, of course.
Sure.
On iOS and Mac Catalyst, it uses the, what do they call it? The iOS web view.
The one that's behind Safari.
Yeah, it's the one that's based on Safari because that's all you can have right. On that platform. And then you asked about WebView 2. Well, WebView 2 is the rendering, it uses the rendering engine of Edge, which is also Chromium-based, but it's built by the Edge team. And so when you run on Windows, whether it's .NET MAUI on WinUI or WPF or WinForms, the Blazor WebView gets its pixels on the screen by virtue of hosting that WebView 2 component inside your application. The WebView 2 component has, you know, essentially all the functionality of a browser. You can navigate and it renders and it can store cookies and settings and so forth. But we internally host that to point it at the HTML and CSS and whatever other assets that your app has.
Okay. You mentioned that the Blazor WebView gives you access to the operating system. Does it give more access than a browser normally does?
Yeah, absolutely. So the key thing to bear in mind with Blazor Desktop is that it's not a web app that's running inside a native application. It's not running inside a regular browser, which has a sandbox and has a variety of restrictions for a variety of really good security purposes. It is a true native application. So think whatever you can do on Windows, you can format the hard drive, you can launch an application, you can launch other applications, you can put system tray icons, you can change the volume, whatever things that a native application can do. Now, the native operating system has its own security, you know, enforcement, things like that. You can't just do anything.
Right.
But whatever any other native application, whatever you can do in, say, C++, you can do here. The only difference is that instead of using native controls to render the UI on the screen, it says, oh, here's a web control that can render HTML and CSS as the UI. So we've done demos where we show launching Notepad or even bringing up in Windows the Win32 format hard drive dialog. And, you know, if you click yes, you know, I better hope, you know, you know what you're formatting. You can do that. That's not something...
Only if you're an administrator, right?
Well, yeah. So you can pop up the dialogue. If you hit OK, yeah, of course, it'll check if you're an administrator. That's something that if you find a way to do that from a regular web browser, boy, is there a bug bounty waiting for you. You're going to make bank on that. And so that's not supposed to be allowed anyway. I don't think.
It's not. But normal stuff like opening a file from the current user's My Documents, all that normal stuff, it's fully available.
Yep. Anything like, look, you know, anybody who's on their phone or on their desktop, Mac, Windows, Android, iOS, whatever it is, anything you see applications doing on there, you can do. Nice. You can absolutely do.
Okay. Now, for you mentioned Maui first. I think Scott Hunter, unless I have old news, gave an update that has pushed until Q2 or something for the GA. Is there a usable preview that's coming out soon?
Yeah, so we've been doing the previews of .NET Maui. So for your first comment, yeah, so it was pushed out. It was originally planned to be released with .NET 6, but we felt it's this whole new thing. It needs more bake time, which I think was, you know, broadly received as the right decision to make. So it's pushed out, you know, about 6 months to kind of the first half of 2022. And
yeah, so then the opinion is which preview will be, quote, usable?
You know. Yeah, so as far as the frequency of previews, there have been previews of .NET Maui along with every .NET 6 release. So they release essentially at the same time. And so the preview, oh gosh, if you're asking me about preview numbers, I'd have a hard time saying. I think preview 9 lined up with the last .NET 6 RC. And I think preview 10 of .NET Maui is, I think, going to line up with the .NET 6 RTM. And then the previews are continued. They've been about once a month. And so that should continue going forwards as well. Which is the first one that would be kind of ready? There are already customers out there who are deploying applications in .NET Maui. Now, it's not an official go live release or anything. So I'm not recommending that people go out and do that. You're certainly free to. There's nothing stopping anybody.
Okay. From so doing in your that. Opinion, it's complete enough where people are doing very significant things.
Yeah, there are people out there running production applications out there. You know, usually it's the release candidates, which we're not at the release candidate stage yet, but it's the release candidate stage where usually it's kind of things are pretty stable. The major bugs have presumably all been found and fixed, and there's no more huge changes is the other thing. Because right now, you know, we're talking about like, should we change all the namespaces of everything in .NET Maui? Well, not of everything, but the main Microsoft Maui namespace has, hundreds of types in it, I think. And that's great when you're starting out because it's just kind of one big namespace, but eventually things need to get kind of filed away into the appropriate sub namespace. So that's something that happens during the preview stage that we're working on. Not something you want to probably deal with too much in a production application as, you know, there's huge shifts in kind of the functionality, but there's a lot already in there. I mean, you can build real applications obviously with it. And I think that's kind of a testament to where the quality is right now.
So for the people who are, you know, not paying attention to the VS 22 release and they're kind of waiting for GA, when they download the GA of VS 22, is the latest Maui going to be ready for them to go, or do they need to download a subsequent, installer?
So the as far as I know, all the Maui bits that you need to have come with Visual Studio. So there's I forget, you know, it's difficult sometimes being from like the inside of like I see like every little change and I don't remember where things ended up because there was a meeting like after the meeting I went to where they changed everything, and so sometimes I don't know. But there should be some preview Maui bits inside Visual Studio, so that I think they're labeled as preview so that people understand. By all means, feel free to install this, but this component is still preview. And all you need is a Visual Studio, and it comes with the project templates for .NET Maui, including .NET Maui with Blazor Desktop. You can go file a new project and get those preview templates and, you know, build your apps, publish them to app stores or email them to your friends and you know, can build apps like that.
Okay. Now back to WinForms or WPF, you mentioned that in WinForms heyday, we need a quick app to do something. We just pull up a form and double click a button and whatnot. With Blazor Desktop, is there a Blazor Desktop wrapper that you would say is probably the default? Or is it always, hey, pick a WPF shell or pick a WinForms shell and just make the whole thing the Blazor WebView control? In your opinion, is the normal path? If literally you just want one Blazor application, but you just want it to be Windows native?
I don't actually have a really strong opinion on how to go about that. I think for I think for WinForms and WPF, one of the things that we've envisioned is that, I think especially for people who have worked in the enterprise where there's probably, like, especially kind of more Windows-based enterprise where there's probably like hundreds of various WinForms and WPF applications that do every which what thing. And I'm sure, Jeffrey, you've probably encountered all of them, you know, every variation there is, all the kind of LOB, the line of business applications, the HR tools and the CRMs and the whatever it is. And we easily envision that some of those applications, people want to start modernizing them, because maybe what they have as a WinForms application today is like, okay, a lot of our users use Mac or they work from home or whatever it is, and they don't have access to those native LOB applications. Let's start webifying it. Let's start replacing UI components, or perhaps even the entire contents of the application, with Blazor components. Now, some applications, that's easy to do. They're not that big. Some, it's a huge undertaking. It's a 6-month or a 12-month project or even more. But you can start taking bits and pieces of that, rewrite them in Blazor, and now you've got your inroad into building a proper web application hosted on the cloud, perhaps. And now you have that reach that you need, that the web, it's hard to beat the web when it comes to reach, because it works on literally anything.
Yeah.
You know, your refrigerator might be able to run web apps, but probably not WPF applications.
Right.
And so I think kind of that modernization direction is one of the things we have in mind for WinForms WPF. Not that anybody has to modernize them, but we think it's something that people want to do.
Oh, for sure.
And we want Blazor, with Blazor Desktop, to be one of those things. And then you can take those Blazor components. If you still want to stay in the native application realm, that's great. Your WinForms application now hosts a Blazor web view with Blazor content. You can now use that in an Android native application too, right? Because now you've got your Blazor components, drop a Blazor web view in your .NET MAUI application. You have the contents of your WinForms app using Blazor running on an Android tablet that somebody might have.
Right.
And I don't know, it's just kind of connecting all these different platforms through Blazor and kind of this standards-based stuff of HTML and CSS.
And for the Windows control, it's actually wrapping WebView 2 from Windows.
Yeah, on Windows, we use the Edge WebView 2 control. And so you do, by the way, also have access to that native WebView. So if you do need to do something that's very specific to Windows and the WebView 2, you have access to that. If you need to hook some special event or, you know, each WebView has some of its own kind of quirks and behaviors and extra features that you might want to take advantage of, or, you know, enable or disable certain things.
Right. I was speaking to someone from the Windows team that was talking about it, and they were specifically working on the WebView 2 control to be embedded in Office applications. So if you guys are verifying that Blazor works perfectly with the WebView 2 control, well, then that means conceivably that we could write Blazor applications or widgets or whatever to also go inside the Office suite.
I would love for Blazor to be used in applications like that. We are talking to lots of teams within Microsoft about using Blazor and Blazor Desktop specifically in their applications. And I think, you know, to see something like that in Office. Now, obviously, Office is a technology that already ships, and so we're not ready yet for that. But, you know, that's today. But who knows in 6 months or 12 months?
Oh, totally.
But they have a lot of developers working on things that aren't Blazor, and so there's we'd have to kind of help them get kind of booted up with Blazor and started. But, you know, I think it could be a really perfect match for what Office is doing, or, you know, any type of application that today uses Electron as a shell, which you can use Blazor with Electron, but there's not from Microsoft, we don't have like a particularly, there's no integration that we offer for that, though you can integrate it yourself. But I think kind of Blazor Desktop, you know, can handle those things.
Right.
Instead of Electron as well.
Many thanks to our podcast sponsor, Clear Measure. Clear Measure is a software architecture company that empowers clients' development teams to be self-sufficient, moving fast, delivering quality, and running their systems with confidence. Whether starting a new project or developing new technologies or techniques, Clear Measure sets up your team to deliver world-class results. Learn more at www.clearmeasure.com. Clear Measure, empowering software delivery.
So you and your team are building a lot of these Blazor desktop applications and making sure various scenarios work, I would imagine, right?
Yep, exactly.
So talk about the development environment for this type of application. Like, besides just, you know, library based unit tests and whatnot, what are the different levels of testing and what libraries work perfectly to make sure that not just that the Blazor screen came up, but that the integration when you're actually calling out to something in Windows, how are you doing that? Is it commodity stuff or is there new things that you found and you had to integrate them into your environment?
There are some parts of it that today are a little bit painful, because one of the challenges when in any platform that claims to say, well, write once, run anywhere, we've heard that for a long time. Some people might even know the references from, gosh,
Sun Microsystems in the early 90s, right? With Java?
Yeah. Or was it even that long? Yeah. It was a long time ago anyway. The follow-up to that is write once, debug everywhere, right?
Right.
And so we try to keep the most things, of course, this as much the same as possible. There's, of course, no substitute to actually testing everywhere, because, man, every platform's always got its own little quirks and things. And sometimes it's not even functionality. It might be a performance thing, like, well, this API works on every platform, but it might not be the ideal API on every platform. So you have to not just test, did the pixel show up, but how long did it take for those pixels to show up? As far as testing goes, there are a lot of technologies out there that can do cross-platform testing. I don't remember off the top of my head what we're using right now internally for some of the testing. A lot of it, quite frankly, is just manual testing, but that's because we're just kind of playing around with it. And so it's, I usually use Windows as my main machine. So I test it on Windows locally. You can run Android emulator locally on Windows, so you can test the Android very easily. And then I have my MacBook where I can switch over. And I on MacBook, you can run iOS simulator. And then you also Mac Catalyst apps, which are kind of based on the iOS architecture, I guess I'd say. And so if you test it on iOS, it probably works on Mac Catalyst, and the reverse is true as well. And so I kind of just switch back between those two, but really for the most part, if I've confirmed that it works locally on Windows and Android, it almost always just works on iOS as well. There's a few quirky little things like paths, like file system paths are a little bit different, and where profile settings are stored a little bit different. So I don't find myself I'm not surprised too often when I switch between the different platforms. And so I think that's kind of a testament to so far what we've been able to achieve with write once, run everywhere. It seems to mostly be true. And I think you very quickly learn what are the seams where, okay, that is a little bit different to the way, you know, where profile settings are stored or something like that.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So if WPF and Windows, will set MAUI aside for a bit, they can just access files anyway. And you can do everything native, then even using, SQL, LocalDB, or whatnot, that's just all normal. I know that Blazor WebAssembly, they're still working on getting an actual relational database to be possible in the browser sandbox, right? That's still not prime time? Or SQLite online? Okay.
Yeah, SQLite is just some amazing thing that runs just about everywhere. If it doesn't run in the browser, I'm almost surprised. So maybe it does, maybe it doesn't, I'm not sure. Browsers do have their own internal kind of data storage, but I don't know quite how. It's probably not as fancy as SQLite.
I think maybe it was Entity Framework that is still needs to do something in order to have the same experience with those browser databases.
That's certainly possible. Yeah. I'm not sure as far as the Entity Framework. There isn't any framework provider for SQLite. Maybe there's some issues with running it in the browser. There's the WebAssembly sandbox it's a browser sandbox. And so there certainly are some restrictions. Sometimes those might have to do with things like threading and things like that, which is very different than the browser compared to what you can do when you're running natively on a device. But those restrictions don't apply to Blazor Desktop, because Blazor Desktop, the quote-unquote code of your application is running natively on the device. So there's no particular sandbox aside from what any other native application can do. So if you're running on an iPhone, yes, you're in a sandbox, the so-called walled garden with what app stores actually let you do. But anything any of those other applications can do, like whatever, you know, game or app or whatever it is you can do on an iPhone running on iOS, you can do in a Blazor desktop application running on iOS as well. So assuming that SQLite with Entity Framework can run on a native iOS application, then you can do it in a Blazor desktop application running on iOS as well. And it works.
Yeah.
It'll work just as well because it's .NET code running on that device.
Sure. So there's probably quite a few developers who used to do a lot of desktop, but they've been doing web for a long time. And so, and I think I'm probably one of them, and take for granted that, oh, every time they hit the URL, they're basically getting the latest version of the application. So if we take our Blazor application, basically embed it in a, even a brand new standalone WPF application, even if we use the new MSIX installer, we still have to do some special things when we want our users to have the new version. Is there anything special or any workflow that pertains to your work, or is that just there's no difference than any other WPF application? And from Blazor team's perspective, you don't have to do anything.
Yeah, it is essentially the same story as other native applications. So, you know, if your users have a WPF application that runs and you want them to get the new one, then they have to go install the new one. Now with app stores, that gets, well, in some sense, a little easier, in some sense, a little harder. The app store at least takes care of, most people have automatic updates on. So like on your iPhone or Android phone, I would imagine by far most people, they just get the new version.
Right.
Now you have to, your app has to go through that approval process. That can take a day or a week, sometimes more if the app store approver, I don't know, was perhaps grumpy that day. Everybody's heard stories of that.
Oh, yeah.
Submit it again and it gets approved even though you didn't change anything.
There's people behind there.
Yeah. It's a human thing. Different people. It's the rules are subjective and, you know, for better or for worse. So there's sometimes issues with things like that, but once it does get updated on the app store within, you know, hours, minutes or days, your users will get that updated thing. Now that's not as quick as the web. The web, the second you push to production, like there is no other version of the application. Like that is the truth. With Blazor and Blazor desktop, it's not unreasonable to go through both avenues. You might have your web app that exists, but is perhaps has more limited functionality. For example, we're chatting on Zoom right now. Well, I'm running the Zoom client application because I figured, I don't know, it probably has slightly better integration or something like that. I don't know if that's true. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. You can just run Zoom in the browser too, or at least I'm pretty sure with Zoom you can every other Teams and GoToMeeting, you can do that as well. But they usually ask a lot of questions about permissions and things like that, which on a native application, well, depending on the circumstances, you might have to as well, but they often have better integration with devices and things like that. And so you might have a web offering that has the latest, greatest, absolute, you know, tip of the production application, but also a native application, which maybe doesn't update as frequently, but might have some additional capabilities that are not easily achievable. Like maybe there's some equalizer settings in Zoom on the native application that you just can't do on the web, let's say. As with anything, it's kind of nuanced and it really depends on what you need. There are a lot of cases where just a web app is great. There's a lot of cases where you can only do things in native app. And then there's, I think, a story to be said for having both, but it's just a slightly different experience depending on what features the user needs or what device they're on. If you're just visiting a friend or you're borrowing somebody else's laptop, you don't want to install stuff and just use the web browser and log in. But on your personal, you know, iPad or Windows PC, install the native application. You'll probably have a better experience.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but as you were saying that, it almost made me think that there'd be nothing stopping us from having one URL loaded Blazor WebAssembly application that loaded into a WebView control in WPF, while at the same time having a different formal Blazor desktop application that maybe ran on a sidebar or something that had the one or two functions that maybe needed the Windows integration, while maybe just screen after screen didn't even need it. am I on the right track or what?
You can absolutely certainly do that. You could have essentially two web views. One is a regular web view that is just a web browser that's showing, you know, http://jeffreypalermo.com/reallycoolapp. And then a Blazor web view for hosting maybe some other parts of the application that maybe benefit greatly from the native desktop access. Maybe it's Jeffrey Palermo's website and hard drive formatter. And so you'd really need that Blazor web view for formatting hard drives. That is certainly one way to do things. Now, one thing to keep in mind is if you're offline, then that other web view is not going to load because you need internet for that. So that might be something to think about as well. And so it really comes down to like the scenarios and the architecture of the application and what you need. And so it's very, what's right for one site or one app might be completely the wrong thing for another app. And so the guidance is unfortunately sometimes that kind of vague, well, it depends. And I mean, it genuinely does.
And then does it depend on?
Yeah, it's with desktop or native app, with Blazor desktop, you can have a 100% offline experience without anything special. You can just install the app and that's it. You're done. Like you have the app, you can disconnect, assuming the app doesn't need any data from anywhere. But if it's like an expense tracking application, let's say, you can do that offline, track all your expenses, take pictures of your receipts, enter all the data. When you have to submit for approval, yeah, okay, you need to go online and sync the data across, but you can do all the rest of it, you know, completely offline, which is great. If it was an online only application, if it's just a website, there are ways to install websites locally and things like that. That's also work for the developer to do. So the question is kind of what do you need in your application? Then you just kind of have to go from there. But the thing I really want to emphasize is that I think that no matter what you decide is best for your application, especially with something like Blazor, we've got an answer for you. And the thing I would add to that is that no matter where you start, even if you kind of start going down what might end up being the wrong design of the application, like let's say you hadn't considered offline as a scenario, and it turns out your manager comes back to you and says, Jeffrey, what about offline? And you say, oh, sorry, I didn't think about that. But good news, manager, I built it using Blazor. I can just take my Blazor components, drop it in a Blazor web view and a Blazor desktop application. I got it running on Android, got it running on iOS, macOS, desktop. And if we do need a web app, we've already got the components all written. I designed the CSS. My designer came to me with some great HTML. I used these libraries for styling things. We're good. It's. I'm not saying it's free. Nothing's free, but it's a lot cheaper than a lot of other routes where like, oh my gosh, like how do I go from my ASP.NET MVC server only application to a native application? Not directly. Like you have to do some major changes to your application, rewrite to do that. But with Blazor, that's not the case. With Blazor, you can take those UI components and a lot of the logic too, and just run it locally on the device or on the web or in a browser.
Okay. Well, let's close on maybe the topics of controls. And there's been a thing called Blazor mobile bindings. And of course, Xamarin had the Xamarin forms and of course, you know, Infragistics and other companies have been pushing out controls for Blazor. In Blazor desktop, is it native UI controls or is it web widgets that are just kind of rendered everywhere?
Yeah, so in a Blazor desktop, you can essentially combine the two in the sense that one of the native controls is the Blazor web view. And so you can have other native buttons or lists or tabs or whatever it is surrounding it. Everything inside the Blazor web view is all HTML. So companies like Infragistics, it's been a while since I checked, but I believe they build, let's say, WPF controls. Mm-hmm. But they also build web controls targeting Blazor.
Yep.
So you could use those Infragistics native controls in the application outside of the Blazor web view. And then inside that Blazor web view control, Infragistics has all kinds of Blazor components for all kinds of gauges and dials and editors and fancy drop-down lists. And you can use those inside that Blazor web view that you could then use on your web app as well. Okay. So the integration with control vendors, I think, is huge in the sense that whatever controls kind of meet your needs, you can host them wherever you need in your application.
So is Blazor mobile bindings carrying forward into MAUI? And is it intended to be use so that it feels more like a mobile app over there, but on maybe Windows or Mac, it kind of looks like how your web application would look?
Yeah, so Blazor mobile bindings or mobile Blazor bindings, some folks might not be as familiar with that. It did two things. I'll talk about the second thing first, which makes it the first thing. The second thing first is the Blazor WebView control. That was the prototype of Blazor Desktop. So mobile Blazor bindings is an experimental project where we're kind of trying a lot of different things with Blazor. One of those things was the Blazor WebView, which we're productionizing or productizing or formalizing. And that's going to ship when .NET MAUI ships in Q2 of 2022, so about 6 months from now. The other part of mobile Blazor bindings, which was the first part, which I'm now talking about second, was using Blazor syntax, so using .razor files, instead of rendering HTML and CSS, they quote-unquote render native controls. It's kind of a mind trip, but they essentially are causing, as those HTML-looking elements that you have in .razor files render, they cause actual native controls to show up on the screen. Now, that was based on Xamarin Forms. So you could have a Xamarin Forms button, a Xamarin Forms shell, a stack layout, all the
like sliders,
entry control, checkbox switch, whatever the controls are. Mm-hmm. You're not rendering HTML. You're rendering Xamarin Forms controls onto the screen. And so you get to use Blazor syntax for how to do at bind and how you do loops and components and all these kinds of things and routing and auth. You use Blazor syntax for that to cause native Xamarin Forms elements to be rendered on the screen. That project continues as an experimental project. And in fact, there's a community pull request out there right now that I'm happy to look at and both scared to look at because it's like tens of thousands of lines of change submitted by a community member to update it to be based on .NET MAUI. Mm. And so I need to kind of carve out probably a week of time to kind of play with that. And I feel really bad about not getting into it sooner because it's been actually sitting there for a little while. But that project continues as an experiment of using Blazor syntax instead of rendering HTML UI, rendering native UI. And so that'll come to MAUI as a prototype for MAUI. And then we see what the feedback, people who have used it seem to like it very much. On Xamarin Forms, which has been great. I have an app on the App Store, on the Apple App Store right now that I built for my own purposes. So I paid $100 to Apple so I could publish my app.
Yep. Is that the recipe app?
Yes, that's my recipe tracking application. So if you want to know what me, my wife, and my kids eat for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you can download that application.
It's iPad only. Nice. So is it part of any kind of vision at this point to extend it to WinForms or WPF or not at this time?
In the mobile Blazor bindings repo, there is an experiment called BlinForms, which is Blazor for WinForms, which uses that same Blazor syntax to render WinForms native elements. I think we only implemented like button, label, and panel or something like that. Enough to prove that it's possible. Yeah.
Everybody wants a Battleship Gray Blazor app, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it can only be gray with black text. Nothing. If you try to put a different color, it crashes. No, joking. Yep. We did that to prove, to verify and subsequently prove that the Blazor architecture is powerful enough to render whatever you want. And that's huge. Because it was really initially designed for the web and HTML and kind of how browsers work. And we've already taken it outside of the browser, and then we've taken it beyond of even HTML and CSS. And so we know it can do a lot of things. Now, would we ship Blazor for WinForms? I wouldn't bet on that. But using Blazor syntax of some shape in the future for building the native part of native applications and not just the native UI of native applications as opposed to web UI in native applications is something we're definitely interested in. And that's what, again, mobile Blazor bindings kind of spearheaded that effort to see, is it viable? And it's pretty neat. I really felt happy using it in part because I'm not a XAML expert. And so that pattern and using view models, I'm just not really familiar with it. I know a lot of people love it. for me, for my web background and using Blazor and loving Blazor, I love that Blazor pattern. And so if I can use the Blazor syntax for everything, that just makes me happy. I'm more productive. I understand it. I know how to debug it. I know how to architect things using that. Like, it's one thing to know XAML, the syntax, but understanding XAML.
Yeah, it's a different language.
To actually build a whole application with it, that's not the same thing. It's like understanding, like my son, he's almost 4. He knows how to write all his ABCs. He can read his ABCs, but he doesn't know how to spell.
Yeah. Right.
He knows
right.
how to spell O-U-T. It's out because that's in a Dr. Seuss book. But beyond that, he can spell his name.
There you go.
But understanding like the syntax and understanding how to actually build things with it, two very different things. And so for me, the Blazor mentality, it's burned into my brain. And so I can just really quickly be productive with cascading values and components and Razor class libraries and scoped CSS. Like it's supernatural. To how I think at this point. And so I can be productive with it. And I think that's going to be true for, well, not just thousands, but tens or even hundreds of thousands of other developers out there.
Oh, totally. And I have some experience with a web design firm, not a programming, but really the company that makes things pretty. They are the design company and they laid everything out, and I think one of the developers gave him a short crash course on how to hook things up to the Blazor, you know, C#, and they just made their screens functional just because it wasn't hard, you know, because they are, you know, the CSS and the HTML, they're experts in that already to make it look right, and then they just made it functional. So it's pretty approachable. I was impressed with that.
Yeah, I think the story you just told, I think it's very common. Like it's just web is the thing that usually people learn first because it's what people see so much every day that it's kind of natural to learn.
Yep.
To learn that first. And then Blazor says, great, now quote unquote animate it.
Now let's do some cool things. Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Alon, thank you for coming on the Azure DevOps podcast and showing us all the ins and outs of Blazor Desktop. We're kind of excited to go through all the new permutations with .NET 6.
Yeah, it's a bold new world, and I think it's really exciting. And I'd love for people to try out Blazor Desktop and .NET MAUI, and you know, give us feedback on the .NET MAUI repo. That's where all the code lives on GitHub. So github.com/.NET/MAUI MAUI, and let us know what you think.
Okay. Is that the same place, or is there a different landing place for Blazor Desktop, or is that one and the same now?
I say all 99% of the Blazor Desktop code is in the MAUI repo. So the Blazor Desktop, the Blazor WebView control for .NET MAUI and for WinForms and for WPF, the code all lives there because they have a lot in common. So it just made sense to put all of them there, even though the WPF and WinForms controls they're not part of MAUI itself, but they kind of ship at the same timeline, and people get upset enough when we have like hundreds of different repos for things. We figured let's have a few less repos on right. GitHub and put everything in one place.
Right. Awesome. Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much again for coming on the show, and how can people find you?
So easiest way to reach me is stop by my house, my address. That's probably not the easiest way. The easiest way to reach me is on Twitter. My Twitter handle is original_EJL. EJL, my initials, original EJL, original_EJL.
All right. We'll include that in the show notes. And, awesome. Yep. You'll be getting a plethora of tweets.
I hope so. I love interacting with folks. People, I've just generally been, people have been incredibly positive about Blazor Desktop. People are super excited about it. And I did a few videos myself on it, and just the feedback is tremendous. And I love seeing, we love all the feedback, and because we're just going to keep making Blazor Desktop better based on the feedback that people have.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And a quick plug for the Dev Intersection Conference. It's coming up December 7th through 9th in Las Vegas, an in-person conference. And if you go, listeners, still haven't gotten your ticket, you can use my last name as a discount code, Palermo, P-A-L-E-R-M-O. And I'm excited. One of my talks that I'm giving is applying a model view controller pattern to Blazor applications. So that'll be fun. And and if you can get out there to Las Vegas in December, come out to Dev Intersection. All right. And until next time, keep shipping.
You've been listening to the Azure DevOps Podcast, a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Go to www.azuredevops.show for show notes and other episodes. On behalf of your host, Jeffrey Palermo, and our sponsors, thanks for listening, and may God bless you.